The criterion that distinguishes a school as Buddhist is its acceptance of four fundamental tenets, known as the four seals. These are: 1. All composite phenomena are impermanent. 2. All contaminated things and events are unsatisfactory. 3. All phenomena are empty and selfless. And 4. Nirvana is true peace. True practitioners are unaffected by external pressures and their own emotions. They are free to secure the temporary and ultimate benefit of both themselves and others. They remain independent, fear nothing, and are never at odds with themselves. Always peaceful, they are friendly with all, and everything they say is helpful. Wherever we go, let us be humble and avoid being noisy or bossy. Let us not hurt other people's feelings or cause them to act negatively. When things are not going well for someone we dislike, what is the point in rejoicing? It does not make his present suffering any worse, and even if it did, how sad it would be that we should wish such a thing. I am absolutely opposed to the death penalty. My predecessor abolished it in Tibet. Today I find it unbelievable that it persists in large countries like China and India. They still kill people in the name of justice in the country of Mahatma Gandhi, in the very land where the Buddha taught. The death penalty is pure violence, a barbaric and useless violence, dangerous even, because it can only lead to other acts of violence, as all violence does. The supreme punishment ought to be a life sentence and one without brutality. It is difficult to impose censorship in a democracy. Though we can still see censorship at work in India, real violence and even explicit eroticism are permitted in Indian films. Women can display themselves very provocatively, as they do everywhere else. Yet until recently, men and women never kissed on the lips. People killed one another, but they didn't kiss. And yet it is more agreeable to kiss than to kill. In Indian films, most of the time we witness the development of a love story, which meets violent opposition. But in the end, the good-hearted people are reunited and rewarded, while the villains are punished. In the cycle of rebirths, which we call samsara, from time to time, there occurs the phenomenon of reincarnation. First of all, let us make a distinction. The cycle of rebirths, samsara, is the very condition of all life. No existence escapes it, unless it gets to nirvana. This condition is painful because it obliges us to live and live again on levels that can be worse than those we have known. If rebirth is an obligation, reincarnation is a choice. It is the power granted to certain worthy individuals to control their future birth. In the case of the death of a person who has been engaging in non-virtuous practices, the consciousness would start dissolving from the upper part of the body and withdraw within the heart. In the case of a person who has performed virtuous activities, the dissolution of the heat starts from the lower part of the body and finally withdraws at the heart. In both cases, the transference of consciousness would take place at the center. One should enter or perform spiritual practice with a motivation similar to the motivation and attitude of a child that is fully absorbed in sports or play. A child fully engrossed in play gets so delighted with it that the child never feels satisfied. Such should be your mental attitude in making effort in Dharma practice. There are many afflictive emotions, such as conceit, arrogance, jealousy, desire, lust, closed-mindedness, and so on. But of all these, hatred or anger is singled out as the greatest evil. This is done for two reasons. One is that hatred or anger is the greatest stumbling block for a practitioner who is aspiring to enhance his or her altruism and attain a good heart. Second, when hatred or anger are generated, they have the capacity to destroy one's virtue and calmness of mind. It is possible to indicate one's particular spiritual way of life through external means, such as wearing certain clothes, having a shrine or altar in one's house, doing recitations and chanting. However, these practices are secondary to one's religious or spiritual way of life because all of these activities can be performed by a person who harbors a very negative state of mind. On the other hand, all the virtues of mind, the mental qualities, are genuine spiritual qualities because all of these internal mental qualities cannot exist in a single moment simultaneously with ill feelings or negative states of mind. Regarding intergender relationships, I see two principal types of relationships based on sexual attraction. One form is pure sexual desire, in which the motive or impetus is temporary satisfaction, a sort of immediate gratification. But it is not very reliable or stable, because the individuals are relating to each other not as people, but rather as objects. In the second type, attraction is not predominantly physical. Rather, there is an underlying respect and appreciation of the value of the other person, based on one's feeling that the other person is kind, nice, and gentle. One can therefore accord respect and dignity to that other individual. While one possesses the facilities of wealth, position, education, and so on, it is crucial that there be some internal restraining factor that constantly keeps one in check so one is not spoiled by these facilities and never loses the fundamental insight into the underlying unsatisfactory nature of cyclic existence. The proper perspective is to utilize this as an aid in the path and in working for the benefit of other sentient beings. There is always the need to maintain balance, not to go to any extremes, and to have full knowledge of how to proceed along the path in the best and most effective way. The creatures that inhabit this earth, be they human beings or animals, are here to contribute, each in its own particular way, to the beauty and prosperity of the world. Many creatures have toiled singly or jointly to make our lives comfortable. The food we eat, the clothes we wear, have not just dropped from the sky. Many creatures have labored to produce them. That is why we should be grateful to all our fellow creatures. Compassion and loving kindness are the hallmarks of achievement and happiness. Overall, I have found much that is impressive about Western society. In particular, I admire its energy and creativity and hunger for knowledge. On the other hand, a number of things about the Western way of life cause me concern. People there have an inclination to think in terms of black and white, and either or, which ignores the facts of interdependence and relativity. Between two points of view, they tend to lose sight of the gray areas. Also, with thousands of brothers and sisters for neighbors, so many people appear to be able to show their true feelings only to their cats and dogs. One great question underlies our experience. whether we think about it consciously or not. What is the purpose of life? From the moment of birth, every human being wants happiness and does not want suffering. Neither social conditioning, nor education, nor ideology affects this. From the very core of our being, we simply desire contentment. Therefore, it is important to discover what will bring about the greatest degree of happiness. A limit to the size of the family is desirable. We have to take care of birth control. It is very, very essential to have fewer children, and those children must be properly taken care of. Besides education, one must introduce to them the reverence for life and the value of human affection. To overcome attachment, we should meditate on the ugliness of what attracts us. The antidote to pride is meditation on the aggregates. To counteract ignorance, we should concentrate on the movement of the breath and on interdependence. The root of the mind's turmoil is, in fact, ignorance on account of which we fail to understand the true nature of things. The mind is brought under control by purifying our mistaken notion of reality.